This interview with Chris is jam-packed with lessons and big mistakes that we need to learn from. Listen when he talks about how when he talked to Ron, one of the customers, and how he got him to select the highest paid plan, but when he talked to PBS, they just stopped returning all his phone calls. Also, wait until the end when he gets advice from a mentor that he thought was absolutely insane. He fought it for a while, but then found it extremely valuable. That and much more. Hey, Jeremy Weiss here. We're here with Chris Savage. He's co-founder, CEO of Wistia. It's a video marketing application which allows you to host, track, and promote your videos. I use Wistia. It's awesome. It has a lot of cool features. It shows you how engaged people are with the video along the whole segment of it. It even allows you to put in, so embed, so people can enter their email in the beginning, middle, or end. So if you stay to the end, hopefully you can enter your email into this. But Chris was named Business Week Top 25 Entrepreneur, 25 or under. Wistia's clients such as Cushman & Wakefield, NBC, A&E, Circus Olay, and many more. Chris, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
That's awesome. So, and a fun fact about Chris is he's notorious for trying to get phrases that catch on among friends, and one of them being, what's the latest?
The current one is, you think you're so great.
So use it in context.
So basically, someone does something, and it's pretty good, and they're like, hey, look at this good thing I made. And it's like, oh, you think you're so great, huh? Or like someone else just like says something, and someone tweets something out about their business, and it's kind of shitty, and it's like, oh, man, they think they're so great. They think they're the fucking best.
Awesome.
Sorry, I didn't mean to swear.
It's okay.
I think I'm so great, you know?
So, Chris, people often talk about how they're trying to get traction with their idea, their product, get sales. They're not sure whether to persist, cut the losses. And I find we learn the most valuable lessons from and how to grow and improve when we make mistakes or we, you know, come across these challenges. Yeah. So luckily enough to have you teach us some of your wisdom, tell us some of the mistakes you made and share that and some of the challenges. So the first thing is tell us two of the biggest mistakes you've made that allowed you to help the product in the business.
Yeah, that's a great question. So one was very early on, we became enamored with getting like a really big name client on board. That big name is HBO. And it was really fortuitous. It was exciting at the time because we had just kind of moved what became Wistia towards Wistia like a month before. And we had gotten like through a talent agency, had connected with HBO, and it seemed like there's this really exciting opportunity, and you know, we like flew ourselves out there on a whim out to LA. We had like no money and just like barged our way into meetings and like did all this stuff because we thought that's like how to be a business person and what have you. But what happened is when we were raising our first round of money, like the HBO deal was something that everyone was like really excited about, and we were excited about it, and we had a proposal out to those guys for like $750,000 a year.
Well,
at a time when we were making $400 a month, so that was a really big deal. And it was exciting and it would have been a great deal to get, we actually ended up not, the deal didn't work. We kind of walked away from it and they weren't happy about it. And, you know, basically they wanted us to do things that we couldn't do. Like they wanted us to like build Wistia so that they could host it on their own servers. And we just thought, you know, if we do this, we're going to have to move to LA. We're going to have to manage it out there. We're going to have to deal with all these other studios. And like, that's actually not that interesting of a market. But the problem was we weren't comfortable cutting that off because we had all these investors who were putting in money and they were really excited about this HBO thing. And it seemed like it was such a big name. It would just put us on the map. And so it distracted us for a long time. Like we built lots of custom things for them. We just basically got distracted by trying to get one really big fish instead of lots of little ones.
Right.
And we had already gotten some, like one little one, and we were on track to get more little ones, but it kind of sent us on this path that was just essentially a waste of time, at a time when we couldn't afford to waste time.
Right. I mean, again, at the time, it's a big opportunity. So, you know, no one would be like, that's a dumb move, but it is distracting. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's just like being realistic around like, are we going to be getting tons of HBOs to sign up all the time? Like, no, we knew we weren't. We knew this was a rare thing. And we knew that if we got lots of little guys to sign up, that would be consistent. But still, we were enamored with it and distracted by it. And it was definitely taught us not to get as wrapped up in every deal. I mean, I think it's even true now that we'll have something come across the transom, and it's like, oh my gosh, this could be so huge and so different. And then it's like, okay, rein it in. Like, let's not do anything too crazy for this. Like, every time we've tried to do something crazy before, it hasn't worked. So, you know, let's be reasonable.
Right. What was the second one? So,
yeah, the second one. So, the first deal we ever closed was with a company called Geodynamics, a medical device company. And when we got them excited, and when they said they were going to buy, like, we said, okay, we have this product that at the time was for artists, long story, but it was for artists. And we had a private way for these artists to share videos. And we never even launched it. But we went to Geodynamics. What they wanted was a private way for this medical device company to share videos. And so we said, we're going to take this thing for artists, and we're going to bring it over here, and we're going to make it work for medical device professionals, for you guys, which basically means we're going to make a really simple web app. And they're like, that sounds great. We'll pay you to make this. And we said, no, because we didn't want to ever go into consulting. We said, "What? Instead, just pay us a monthly fee." And we made up a pricing grid that was like, $100 a month was the light plan, $200 a month was the medium plan, and the heavy plan was $400 a month. So slid the piece of paper over. This guy, Ron, like, picked it up, and he looked at it. He's kind of like, we'll go with the heavy plan. And we're like, holy shit, we did it. Oh, my gosh. Like, that was $400 a month. We should have asked for more because we just made it up. We didn't even have a product yet. Then, like, 2 weeks later, we'd gotten to PBS. And, you know, we had some network. My background's in film. That's how we were able to get there. But I only had one intro to PBS. It's not like I had, like, 30 intros. So we go over there. We walk them through the product at this point. We now have Geodynamics paying us and using it. We're like, oh, this is a paid product. Like, tons of companies use it, you know, saying all those things. The PBS is like, this is really great. We can really see using this. How much does it cost? And I had the same piece of paper sitting in my bag. And I kind of looked at Brendan. And he looked back at me. And I was like, it's $2,500 a month. And they were like, You know, they kind of clammed up. And then they stopped returning our phone calls. And that was it. And I couldn't even go back to them and get them to go for the $400 a month thing. Because they were just like, no, this is ridiculous. Like, we can't work with these kids. And I think it was, you know, it definitely just like taught me the value of being honest about where you're at, and like and being comfortable with that honesty. And had we just said like, hey, like, this is a new product and we only have like one customer, this is what they're paying, like, does this seem fair to you? Yes, we might have left some money on the table because they could have had more control, but we could have had them as a customer, and we could have learned from them, mm-hmm. and that would have been great. Side note, they're actually now a customer. It just took them like 4 years.
So how do you figure out pricing in the beginning or even now?
It's really tough. It's tough because if your price is too low if no one's complaining, is what I've found. Like, you kind of always want some people to complain. And if it's too high, people will stop talking to you. And fortunately for us, like, we were like sitting down with everybody that we were talking to at the beginning, or on the phone with every single person. Like, it took us a long time before we were able to, like, take credit cards online. And that meant that we were having some kind of discourse with everybody. So we would change our pricing constantly. We still do change it. And what I've learned is, like, always grandfather everybody.
Right. So everyone better go sign up now if they want to be grandfathered in at the current price, right?
Exactly. But like, we've always just grandfathered absolutely everybody, and I've found that I've been, you know, we can change the price here, and it doesn't cause like a big hoopla in terms of like people being upset because everyone's on their same thing that they've always been on.
Right.
And a few times that we have lowered prices, we've like automatic, you know, we've gone back and lowered it for people who were on much higher prices before that.
That's great. So what's? Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, now we're at the point where we have enough customers, enough people going through that we can see the impact that the pricing makes in a very, very different way. So it's easier.
Yeah. What's one of the big milestones? You're talking about the credit cards a little bit. What's one of the big milestones you're especially proud of after you overcame a big challenge in the business?
So that's a great question. I mean, a huge milestone for me was that first time that we actually had people buying with credit cards. And it was the first time that I woke up and in my email was like an alert that someone had bought overnight, which was an amazing feeling because we got to like 40 or 50 customers or so without having credit card payments online. We were doing all invoice and faxes and in person. The first credit card number we ever got was someone who came in for a meeting and they said, I want to buy this. And so we said, okay, write your credit card number down on this legal pad, which they did. It was not my idea, by the way. This is Adam Zase, who was like the fourth person to join us, like super, super early. So our VP of sales at the time, his role has like evolved and he does board business development. But in any case, he was just like, yeah, give me your credit card number. And he wrote it down in his legal pad and put it in the system, like through the back. And that was it. So, but that was a huge moment to realize like this thing is big enough that like, that people can actually buy without talking to us and that we could get to that point.
Yeah. There was a turning point you were talking about too, that you were saying seemed obvious. About the embedding?
Yes. So we didn't have any embedding at all in the product. It was all private content for, you know, filmmakers to share unfinished videos, for medical device companies to share like patient information for stuff like that. And then we added embedding at around the same time actually that we started. It was the same time that we started processing credit cards, which lots of people have been asking for. They've been saying, we love the way that we can use your product to manage our videos, but we want a way to embed this on our site too. And the analytics that we had were being used by training initially. And then people said, we want this on our site. And that's was like light bulb went off. You know, like when that happens, it was like night and day. Like just in terms of customer growth, like it really accelerated from that point.
Well, how do you decide to actually include that? Because you've probably heard it many times before. What was the point where you're like, okay, we need to actually do this?
So we, like many times we've done this here where we'll have something like this, like embedding, not that fundamental of a thing these days, but we'll come up with a way to manually do it first. So we would say like, if you want embed code, email us and we'll take the embed code and send it to you. So that's what we were doing at first.
Got it.
Which sucked because it's embarrassing to send somebody an email with an embed code when they know that there's the capacity to just embed a video. But it forced us to feel the pain before we automated it. And so we knew that this should be a good thing. I think we just didn't know how good of a thing it would be.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of goes back to being distracted from the HBO. It's like that big thing. And so you're doing things manually, so you don't get maybe too distracted to building it in the product. So it's almost like you're taking that previous experience, and even though maybe painful manually, it seems like a smart thing to do before you like launch it across the whole system.
And we still do that all the time now. Like, we try to feel the pain on things before we automate them away so we can actually understand what we're giving up when we automate something away. And we can understand and have an idea for a better solution before we automate.
Yeah. So, Chris, what's one of the best pieces of advice that you would have for a founder, for a company, to make sure they know?
I would just say that if you look at the history of all business, which is the history of the world, essentially, most businesses were not built really quickly. You know, it takes a long time, and I think we see a lot of businesses that look like they're built really quickly, but actually were built over a long time. You know, Angry Birds is an example that people like to give for that. Like, it was like game number 53 that the Rovio guys had made. And they were just like clearly like figuring out how to make games and figuring out all of the aspects of the things that they cared about that like entered into that first iteration of Angry Birds, which was also well timed and took off and everything else. But like, they're still building a company, and it's not, I wouldn't say they're like a flash in the pan, you know, like there's more to that. And for us, you know, when we first started, I thought this was going to be like a 2-year, 1-year kind of thing. It'll be 7 years in June, and I love it. And it's just super fun. And I think that being able to have fun and like work with great people and being inspired by the people around you and not compromising on your values all adds up when you're doing something for a really long time, which is one of the competitive differentiators you can have when you're not trying to have an overnight success.
So what point were you like, what year in were you like, finally, we're getting to the point where this is where I wanted to be? I mean, you're never there, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, about 4 years in, it was clear that we were not going to ever go out of business. And we weren't profitable yet, but we were generating enough revenue, and we had such a commitment to our customers. Like, I had so many customers that we were just talking about, like, we can't fail because they actually rely on this. And there isn't another option for them. And whatever we have to do, if we will just go back to paying nobody salaries or whatever, like, and everyone was on board with this. There's just like, it's just too important. The customers are too important. It was about 4 years in. Up until then, we were just like clawing our way up, trying to figure out how to message things and design things and build things that actually fit together and made sense.
Yeah, because now I feel like I see Wistia everywhere. I mean, like on a lot of sites. Who are those clients that you were top of mind when at that point when you were like, we're unwilling to go out of business?
Yeah, I mean, it was like definitely Cirque du Soleil was a big one because they had taken a huge risk on us. They did not realize how big of a risk they had taken and that they were client like number like five. But they had taken a huge risk on us. They still use us. They do like a ton of their talent management for us. So like, they're like casting for people all across the world. People are uploading videos to them and they're taking a look at fire breathers and all this stuff. And we're deeply integrated with other systems. And it's just kind of like, man, you know, if
fire breathers,
right. Yeah. Do you have fire breathers and contortionists and, you know, all the things that you are like, you need to visually see someone on a video doing to understand like how good they are. And it was them and like just other big name brands that had taken a risk on us and that I had sold and others had sold that I just felt like we can't fail these people.
Yeah.
And also that like, we're not going to have to, you know, it was like, we're not going to have to fail them. Maybe this ends up being a really small company and maybe we can't grow it, but at least these customers, we're going to treat them right.
Yeah. So overnight success in 7 years, right?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Still working for that overnight success.
So Chris, what's the most important lesson you've learned so far from running Wistia?
That's a good question. I think it's hard to, I think it's hard to pick just one thing, but what I would say is that to run towards the scary things and that like you have more capacity to grow than you think you do. So, you know, there's a lot of things I didn't think I would ever be able to do. Like I didn't think that, you know, we're 17 people now, which to me feels big on one hand, it feels really small on the other hand, because we have really huge aspirations. But like, I was like, how will we manage people like this? Like, how is it supposed to work? Am I supposed to have all the answers? Like, am I supposed to just say like what to do and everyone does it? And that's how it, like, and that, it, you know, you just have no idea that actually it's about surrounding really yourself with really smart people that make you work harder. And like, it just feels less scary because they're so good. And like, you know, like, or even giving talks. Like, I used to be terrified of public speaking.
Really?
Just like, mortified, absolutely mortified of it.
You never know that.
And I was like, I'll never be able to do this. And, like, the first time I gave a talk, I was just, like, just stammering through it. And I was like, you know, people clapped, but, like, I only got, like, 5 or 6 questions at the end. Does that mean, like, I did a really bad job? Like, I don't know. And then, like, it took me a long time to realize, like, wow, that was, like, one of the best talks I've ever given because... like most of the time people aren't giving, you know, aren't asking questions and they felt like they could approach me and like, and, you know, it's just like, I had no idea. And I think that it's easy to underestimate just how much you can grow doing this stuff.
What was something that you remember that maybe you didn't know the answer to and like one of the team members just went above and beyond that helped at that point? You're like, I don't know what to say. I'm not sure what to do in this situation. And they just kind of picked it up because that was their expertise. Is there a moment you can remember?
I mean, it happens all the time. It just happens all the time that someone's like, We've had a couple times when there was like competitive things early on and someone would be like poking around or someone read an article. And I remember the first time Adam Zase, he was just like, I got this. Let me just talk to these people. And I was like, we're going to talk to them? Like, I thought we were going to ignore them. I thought we were going to like be, say something mean or we were going to be angry or whatever. And then by the end of it, they're like great friends. And it's like, holy shit, you know, this one thing that seems like terrified, you know, seemed terrifying at one point is actually really empowering. Like, there's actually a number of people who have been competitors of ours now that I've learned from Adam, you know, that that we became friends with them because it's kind of like we all saw the same opportunity and we're excited about similar things, and that's rare. Like, it's, you know, and so, like, maybe we do think about things the same way, and it's just interesting. I mean, I feel fortunate that I've gotten to know a lot of those people, that they pushed me, and some of them are customers now because like they've moved on from their businesses and they use Wistia, and that feels really great. But it wouldn't be that case if we hadn't like focused on building relationships with them and kind of taken a step back.
Yeah, no, it does seem counterintuitive, but I guess everyone has their own like niche or take, even if it's like a very similar industry. So Chris, what's been one of the biggest challenges when you first started and compare it to today?
I think the biggest challenge, one of the biggest challenges is just like how we have communication at the business today, and how we communicate in such a way. How can we communicate in such a way that we're sharing information organically the way that we used to when we were really small?
Right.
Lots of people, I think, caveat would see us today and then be like, "You're really small both times." Like, but it's just definitely now. There's teams that focus on different parts of the business. There didn't used to be teams as much. It was like individuals. We used to all sit around one table. So if someone was on the phone with a customer and they're running into a problem, everyone else knew what was, just kind of organically knew what was going on and like could take action based off of that. One thing in particular, everyone used to do support every day. There was like no one person who's doing it. Now we have a team of three people that are dedicated to it. And the support is like the lifeline of what the customers want, what the customers need. And so we do things like now, we do this all-hand support thing where we cycle through, and we've tried to get it going a number of times. It's been hard. Like, this is a good example. It's like, it's been hard to keep it really consistent because everyone's so busy and pulled in their own directions. But it's such an important thing to get a sense of just what customers are running into and what problems people are having and where we should be growing the product that we fight for it now. So that's like the kind of thing we never used to fight for before. Now we're like fighting to do that, just that everyone can have the same pulse of what's happening.
Yeah. What's something, as far as the videos go, how do people know what is good or not good? Because I know you're mentioning there's a lot of people ask questions about comparing.
Yeah, that's a great thing. Like, that's a perfect example of something that, you know, you'd see it. I saw that in support. Others have seen it in support where someone's like, "Hey, you know, my video is getting like people are watching 90% on average. Is that good? Is that bad? You know, how am I doing?" And then that led us to make blog posts about like pulling down data across like all the videos in the system and taking a look at like what is the average engagement based on different lengths and like how has that changed over time, and some like industry stuff and the play rate, the percentage of people that click play on the video, all these different things driven by like that kind of a thing. And obviously, like, there's more that we can do there. There's more we will do there, just purely based on that customer support.
So what is one thing that I should look at when I'm looking at the stats? Like, what's normal?
Well, so I mean, honestly, the best thing you should do is, I should say this, if you search for "Does Length Matter Wistia," you will find a blog post about the lengths of videos.
Okay, good. I'm glad it's safe to look at that post.
Yeah, no, yes. It's very safe.
Okay.
I mean, that's a good example, just side note, but like, I never dreamed we would have blog posts that were like, had titles like that, and they were just like fun and silly and ridiculous, but that's who we are, that's who we've always been, and like, one of the things I've learned is that you can't fight who you are, and you just gotta be willing to like put it out there, and that's actually what people want.
Right.
And you'll see like a lot of the videos, if you go to our Learning Center, for example, like a lot of the videos that are in there are just like, there's like lots of silly things that they don't really need to be in there. They're in there because like it makes it fun for us.
It's your personality. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, And that actually, the personality can be a differentiator, which is like a crazy thing to even think about. But
so, Chris, I have one final question before I ask it. I want people to know a little bit more about Wistia. Can you talk a little bit about what's going on now that's exciting and just Wistia in general?
Yeah. Basically, you know, we're trying to make it easier for people to use video on their website to drive more traffic to their website, to make better content, to build their own audiences. That's what we're excited about. And there's a lot of stuff that we're doing. Like, we just launched this thing called Labs a couple weeks ago. I don't know if you saw it, but...
Yes.
Yeah, Labs is, like, super fun for me. It's just all these advanced things. We want to make it easier to build advanced stuff on top of video. So we have, like, the Twitter Follow Lab, where you can have follow buttons come up within the video at different periods of time. So you can just, like, one click while you're watching and follow somebody. We have mid-roll links. We have, like, things that you can sync presentations to videos. We have like this thing called dim the lights that just like dims the page on it, and there's just lots of fun stuff in there. And the thing that's exciting for me is just helping people build an audience in a long-term way that they can carry with them. You know, it's like we make a lot of videos to market ourselves, but we also make videos and get people's email addresses and then can send them updates about different products and send them blog posts and do all this other stuff because like it's our audience at the end of the day, and I feel like that's a really powerful thing, and because it's a really long-term thing. You know, it's almost like, should you blog on your site or should you write notes on Facebook? Well, like 3 years ago, the Facebook like company page looked a lot like a blog, and you could have just put all your shit there, but they've kind of changed the rules many, many, many times, and so you would have been screwed if you had not owned your audience at the end of the day.
Right.
And the thing that I see that I'm just like really amped up about and excited about is helping people communicate better and build their own audiences.
Yeah.
Because I think we're still at the beginning of a just massive shift towards people building on its like audiences that they can then monetize with products, as opposed to like renting space on other people's audiences to try to get them to buy their product. Like Red Bull is a perfect example. You know, the stratosphere jump, like the most advanced, they just bought an F1, like, formula racing team. Like, they are, like, they produce an enormous amount of content all the time. They never say drink Red Bull. But yet, like, people pay to watch Red Bull content, which then has a brand impression and feeling, which is completely attached to a beverage, which is essentially a competitor to Coke.
Right.
But they've just changed the whole dynamics of everything such that they have the most advanced, like F1 like design guys in the world working for them, that they have like the highest, you know, free fall of all time was done by an energy drink. Like, and the reason it was done by an energy drink is because they figured out how to turn that into content and build their own audience.
Yeah. I mean, I'll tell you why I like Wistia. It gives me the control too, like you were saying, but also it lets me see like where people are. Like if I say something stupid with Chris in his interview, like do people just drop off? Like, yeah. Or do I say something, or they really like a certain question, and I can see their engagement. You can actually see the engagement, you know, within the video, which is kind of cool. And you can customize it. Like, if I, you know, want people to come back and see other videos, you know, you could put an opt-in there and not have it be like a wall. I could put it at the very end of the video, and people want to see it, or if someone could put it in the middle or the beginning. But I just like the control that it gives me, so.
I mean, it's just like your website. Like, I think it's like... For me, it's just if you have control over your website and you can put your own logo in and like have the flow make sense for you and like talk about the things that are important to you, you're going to do a lot better than if you can't. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, but I appreciate that you like those things. I mean, I love those things, too. We use it ourselves. So,
Chris, the final question I have is, what's the best advice you've gotten? You've given some great advice to us. What's some of the best advice you've gotten from a mentor or advisor that's been most valuable?
So one of our advisors is this guy. His name is Ashton Peary. He's the CEO of a company in New Hampshire called Renesas. Have like an information data thing when there's like cyber attacks and stuff. They're the people who like track. It's a pretty cool company. But in any case, one of the things that he told us early on was that this is just business, and like you need to be willing to take a break and step out of it to like recharge. And he always used to do like 2 weeks sailing like in the Caribbean every summer. and where with like no phone and nothing else. And I thought that was ludicrous, and I thought that was just insane. And for a really long time, I did not take a break, and really long time did not take a vacation. And I've learned that taking that step back is a lot more important than I appreciated, because it's so hard to get out of the day-to-day and see, like, what are the big problems that we should be working on? What are the things that are actually working really well? Like, what are the things that, you know, should we change the direction of the company? Or are there people that this, that what we're doing, like, I thought it was relating to, and it's not relating to them at all? And, like, it's so much time. Like, every time we get high level, we learn more things like that. So I think that's definitely something that I've learned, is like, it's really important to be able to take a little time off and like, and take a breath and refocus and revisit things.
Yeah. That's hard to do, but yeah, it's good advice.
Yeah.
Chris, I want to thank you so much for your time and your advice. And I really appreciate you coming on. My final words to you is you think you're so great.
No. Oh yeah.
But thank you so much.
All right.
People check out Wistia.
Okay.